Item 10 is case number CPC 2016-3182CA, and the associated environmental is ENV 2016-3183CE. This is a citywide project regarding all council districts. An ordinance amending Chapter 1 and adding Chapter 1A to the Los Angeles Municipal Code to comprehensively reorganize zoning code processes and procedures. Please note, commissioners, that a technical modification has been distributed on this item. At this time, we'll hear from City Planning Staff Bonnie Kim. Bonnie, please go ahead and take as much time as you need.
Good morning. Good afternoon, sorry. Tom Rothman, Principal City Planner for Code Studies, and I'm joined with some key members of Code Studies and particularly the Recode LA project. And I just wanted to remind the commission that we were here just 2 months ago with an update to Recode, to what to expect out of this five-year project. And we had anticipated that we would be coming in October with a major ordinance, which is in front of you today. So Bonnie is the project manager, and she'll be giving the presentation, and the remainder of us will be here for questions afterwards.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Bonnie Kim with the Department of City Planning, and I'm here to give a presentation of our processes and procedures ordinance. So this ordinance is one part of the Recode LA project, which is a comprehensive revision of the city's zoning code. The first major milestone of the Recode LA project was the R1 variation zones that were adopted last year. This is the second major milestone, and future milestones include zoning options for the downtown and Boyle Heights community plans and the rest of the community planning update effort. We've been working on this ordinance for over 2 years. Initial research began in 2016, and it was developed in consultation with the Zoning Advisory Committee, which is a oversight committee for the Recode LA project that's composed of representatives of various stakeholder groups from around the city. We also gave regular updates to Plan Check NC, as well as holding extensive internal working group sessions. So one of the first tasks that we completed was an analysis of the existing conditions and the existing processes and procedures. And what we found were that the current zoning code contains over 100 different processes with similar but slightly different workflows. In addition, all those processes are scattered throughout the code. There are common elements that are repeated inconsistently, and it's generally an inaccessible presentation of information. So overall, these are the key themes of our proposed improvements. We would like to consolidate and standardize our processes, create a centralized location of information, and create consistent headings with clear language. So when we say consolidate process, we think that it's very important that people understand the difference between a process and a procedure. A process would be a workflow. An example would be the process for reviewing a CUP, a variance, or a zone change. And then the procedures are the individual steps in a workflow. So that would be steps such as completing an application, sending out notification, conducting a public hearing, the decision maker having 75 days to act. So when we say consolidate, we compared all the different processes in the zoning code, and where there were similar or identical procedures, we've combined those processes so that there's no unnecessary variation. Similarly, when we say we want to centralize information, we reviewed all the scattered locations, the various sections that such as 1224, 1232, 1227, and have taken all those processes and put them into one new article, Article 13 of a new chapter in the Municipal Code. So the current zoning code comprises Chapter 1 of the Municipal Code, and we are proposing with this ordinance to establish a Chapter 1A. And the second bullet point includes an example of what the table of contents for Chapter 1A would be, with Article 13 highlighted. So Article 13 is all the administrative provisions that are included in our Processes and Procedures Ordinance. At the same time, this ordinance is establishing the rest of the articles of Chapter 1A, but those are placeholders. Those will be filled with content as future community plans are updated and new zoning options are applied on the ground. So the implementation of this ordinance is twofold. Because these are administrative provisions that have nothing to do with the actual zoning of a property, there are no zone changes proposed as a part of this ordinance. These administrative provisions will apply citywide with no distinction between areas of the city that have not yet been updated with the new community plan and areas that are updated with the new Recode Zoning LA options. So for a time, we will have two parallel zoning codes, a Chapter 1 and a Chapter 1A, but regardless, every area of the city will be using the same processes and procedures. So the next segment of the presentation will be an overview, section by section, of the actual contents of the proposed ordinance, with the overall theme being that we are trying to make the processes and procedures easier to find and follow for all parties. So some of the key changes for the sake of standardization and consolidation that are being proposed are in relation to public hearing notification requirements. First, the amount of time that is required for notice by mail today currently ranges from 10 to 24 days, and we are proposing to standardize that at 21 days for all entitlements. Public hearing notification radius. Today we have three levels of notification, adjacent and abutting, 100 feet and 500 feet, and we are proposing to change that to adjacent and abutting, 300 feet and 500 feet. Finally, the appeal period today can range from 10 to 15 days for various entitlements, and we are proposing to standardize that to 15 days for all types of entitlements. So next, you can see the graphic on the left-hand side. That'll show you as we go division by division through the article. First is the authorities section. So this would be a centralized list of decision makers and their individual authorities to act. And by decision makers, we mean bodies such as the City Council, the City Planning Commission, the Zoning Administrator, et cetera. Next is the general procedural elements. These are the administrative provisions that apply generally to all processes. Examples include multiple approvals, application completeness, and how to calculate the required time period for a notice. We've also included one minor change, which would be an extension for the time period to utilize a project approval for projects with 100% affordable housing. Today it's 3 years, and we're proposing to extend that to 6 years for 100% affordable housing projects. The next division deals with legislative actions. So there are two minor changes here. For the general plan adoption and amendment process, we're including a provision that would allow batching of general plan amendment requests. This is a provision that was initiated by the City Council in the past, so we felt it was an appropriate time to include that. And then the policy action process, which is a standardized process of three separate processes that exist today, by which the City Planning Commission may adopt policy documents, such as design guidelines or standards. Next is quasi-judicial review. And here we have several name changes for the processes. So for the zoning administrator determination and conditional use permits processes that exist today, we're proposing to rename and recategorize them into three types of conditional use permits, class one, class two, and class three. The existing zoning administrator determination process would be called a class one conditional use permit. The existing zoning administrator conditional use permit would become a class two conditional use permit. And then the existing City Planning Commission conditional use permit would become the class three CUP. There is one single CUP today that is decided by the APC, the Area Planning Commissions, and we felt that instead of creating a fourth category, it was more appropriate to reassign that CUP to the City Planning Commission. And then we've renamed Site Plan Review to Project Review. Next is ministerial action, and here we're proposing that the administrative clearance process be renamed Administrative Review. Then we have the specific plan implementation processes, also a few name changes. Instead of project permit compliance, we are proposing project compliance, and project permit adjustment would be renamed project adjustment. Then we have quasi-judicial relief. So we have a change proposed for the decision maker on an adjustment. We'd like to change it from the zoning administrator to the director. And then we have alternative compliance, which is a new process that would allow an applicant to request relief from a specific development or performance standard. But the proposed alternative design must be equivalent or better than the original standard and consistent with the intent of the regulations. Additionally, this process is only allowed to be used for regulations and standards that have been explicitly permitted to use this process. Today, in the current code, there is only one instance where this could be used, and that is the bicycle parking design standards. The other new process in this category would be the review or modification of entitlement. So this is actually based on an existing process, our plan approvals process, and this is a mechanism by which the department may review granted entitlements, or an applicant can come back and request a modification to a granted entitlement. They would be limited to no more than a 20% cumulative increase or reduction of physical development, planned operation, or conditions of approval. Additionally, the decision maker on the modification would be the same as the decision maker on the original entitlement. And this would be a discretionary action. There's no ministerial or administrative approval of a modification. Then we have non-compliance. So this is mostly name changes. Revocation of conditional use or quasi-judicial approval is being proposed to be renamed evaluation of non-compliance. And administrative nuisance abatement is being proposed to be renamed nuisance abatement and revocation, with also a proposal to change the decision maker from the director to the zoning administrator. And this is because in practice, the zoning administrator always processes these types of cases. And today the code, it's a director authority, but it's delegated to the zoning administrator. So we felt it was appropriate to codify that the zoning administrator is indeed the decision maker. Next, we have our general or miscellaneous administration, and this includes the existing interpretation of zoning code process. We are simply maintaining this process. We have division of land or subdivision processes, and other than changes to the notification requirements for the purposes of standardization and alignment, there are no other, we're simply maintaining the existing subdivision processes. The same goes for the historic preservation processes. There are no changes proposed to any HBOZ areas or zone changes or any HBOZ regulations other than carrying over the existing HBOZ processes. Also the same for a coastal development processes. We are maintaining the existing coastal development processes with no changes other than modifications for the purposes of alignment and standardization to the notification requirements. We are maintaining the existing appeals from LADBS determinations process. And then we have a new section related to CEQA administration that would codify existing city policies. The CPC recently reviewed and recommended a CEQA appeals ordinance, I believe last month, and this expands on that ordinance. Some of the basic components of that were that all project appeals must be exhausted before a CEQA appeal may be filed. The appeal period would be 15 days, so that would be consistent with our appeal period for all other project approvals. The City Council is the decision maker, and the City Council has 75 days to act. In addition, we've added a prohibition of improper segmentation, in other words, a prohibition of piecemealing, and we've also, this also establishes enforcement procedures if it's been determined that there was improper segmentation or piecemealing. And then lastly, we have a definition section for the new administration article. So to give you a summary of some of the public outreach that we conducted, we held 4 zoning advisory committee meetings that are always open to the public just on this topic. We conducted 5 public hearings in various areas of the city and at different times of day. We conducted 11 stakeholder group information sessions with regular social media posts, regular email updates, which contains over 3,000 subscribers. And then posted the ordinance on the department website, on the Recode LA project website, and it was also posted on Markup, which is a document-based feedback system on the Recode LA project website. To give you a sense of the timeline, we spent over 2 years on this ordinance, and over 1 year of that was spent on the outreach efforts. So we released the initial draft to the public on September 8th of 2017 and conducted our first round of public outreach, which included meetings with various stakeholder groups representing both the neighborhood councils and community members and professional associations such as the LA County Bar Association and the American Institute of Architects. We also included 4 public hearings, which, as I mentioned, were conducted in various parts of the city and at various times of day. Then we took the feedback that we received and revised our ordinance and released a version 2 to the public on June 1st of 2018. We conducted a second round of outreach, which included, again, multiple public meetings, as well as a 5th public hearing on June 26th. And then we made revisions again based on the public comment and released our staff report and revised version 3 ordinance on September 12th. And we'd just like to note that typically staff reports are released 10 days before the City Planning Commission meeting, but given the scope of the project, we felt that it was appropriate to release it 1 month in advance so that everyone would have a chance to review in detail. So lastly, just to give a summary of some of the public comment that we received, in total we received 9 pieces of written correspondence with 10 comments coming through our Markup system. This is previous to the staff report being released. Post staff report released, we're aware of 4 additional pieces of written correspondence that were submitted according to the CPC submittal guidelines. And then the bullets on the right are a summary of the types of comments that we received that are all addressed in the staff report, but I would just like to note that the very first bullet is the most frequently commented item, which was a provision that we had in our previous drafts where publication in a newspaper would substitute as mail notice when over 1,000 notices would be required for certain legislative actions. That was, we heard a lot from the public during the meetings and during the hearings that they were in opposition to this, so we responded and removed that provision. And that's all for the ordinance, and we're available to answer questions.
Thank you very much. That was very informative. At this time, we'll open public testimony for the item. Each speaker who's filled out and turned in a speaker card will have 1 minute to speak. Please line up behind the podium as soon as you hear your name called. Joel Miller and Craig Lawson. And before I begin public testimony, I want to note that Dana Perlman has left. Caroline Cho has rejoined us. And Renee Dake Wilson has a brief announcement.
This is Renee Dake Wilson. I just want to say I've had a few members of the public reach out to me regarding this ordinance. Will Wright, as an individual, reached out to me personally, sharing a letter from Jennifer Dines and Heidi Feldstein, about which I think are probably comments we're going to hear today if they're not here already, about opposition to the ordinance and change of control. I didn't have any dialogue with them. Also, Joel Miller reached out. He's a member of the ZAC and an architect who has been most involved in this. And he sent me a letter in July and iterated his the many points of his concern per that letter, which is a public letter that went to staff, I believe. Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome, Christine. I got your other speaker card that said you were going to be speaking for Joel. So we will put a minute on and you can begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, President Millman and members of the commission. I am speaking today on behalf of Joel Miller, who is a member of the Zoning Advisory Committee. First, he would like to commend the staff for their, and congratulate you on your hard work. He says that he has welcomed the opportunity to assist the Code Studies Unit in their endeavor and that he has thoroughly read the document three times and offered comments. His comments generally today fall into two categories, policy matters and internal inconsistencies. The staff will probably tell you that they have made few, if any, changes to the subdivision regulations, but today we have an opportunity to address something that should be amended. As currently written, the code allows the advisory agency to close the public hearing but still accept conditions of approval from other city departments without affording the subdivider an opportunity to respond to the proposed conditions, and in some past cases, the conditions have been accepted by the advisory agency even after the period appeal has expired.
I'm sorry, that goes quickly. If you would like to submit the comments to staff as a same-day submittal, if they meet our submission requirements, we would be happy to take them.
Yes, we will be. Thank you.
Thank you. Speaking of Heidi Feldstein, George Crowder, and Brad Kane.
Good afternoon. My name is Heidi Feldstein. I am co-chair of PICO NC Land Use and serve on the board, but I'm here in my individual capacity. I first received this 948-page document on September 12th because I subscribed to the ordinance. There are very material changes in the decision-making and lines of authority. All you need to do is to compare section 13.1.1C with respect to city council with 13.1.2C with respect to the mayor's office. You will see that in the first instance, it purports to modify the city charter, and in the second instance, it only incorporates it by reference. You can also take a look at what it does with respect to area planning commissions. It gives them decision-making authority without the magic language that it will be ultimately subject to the authority residing in this committee and in city council. This ordinance shifts notice, participation, decision-making, and power away from citizens, away from neighborhood councils, away from this body, and away from city council, and I urge you to reject it and to give us another month to give Mr. Rothman our comments.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is George Crowder. 12 years ago, I became a homeowner near Pico and Fairfax. I've had a lot to learn about all the matters that anyone owning property can readily imagine, but now I must learn terms such as TOC, HPOZ, Q conditions, and upzoning. These apparently explain why our neighborhood is under assault. On the adjacent residential block, 67 units are under development. In the immediate neighborhood, 867. But those figures are 2 months old, and by now the numbers are higher. In particular, the issue of upzoning is incredibly threatening to residential owners when we see a single-family home replaced by a five-story, 14-unit building. Should our R1 neighbors be rezoned, we could wake up to find that this is not a nightmare, but a reality. And this presentation concealed a lot of nuts and bolts that I fear could threaten us in the future.
Thank you. And Craig Lawson, I did call you earlier, so please join the queue. Please go ahead, welcome.
Welcome, my name is Brad Kane. I'm president of the PICO Neighborhood Council and president of the South Carthay Neighborhood Association. This is the second time in a few months that we've learned that the planning department has completely avoided providing notice to us of changes that directly affect the neighborhood council and the surrounding community. With regard to the Purple Line plan, their stated outreach was a failure. They did not contact five community organizations within our neighborhood council or the neighborhood council itself. They assumed we were not interested. With this plan, as I learned on Monday, notice periods would be shortened. We would not have the ability to object to waivers of hearings. We would not get notice directly anymore. You would shrink the notice. All of this is not part of what LA, or Recode LA, was intended to be. And we need to take a step back, talk directly to each neighborhood council and see if they support this. Not neighborhood council organizations, you know, and say, oh, we're recoding. We've heard that.
Thank you very much.
I ask that you delay this so we have time to respond.
Thank you. Before you start, Mr. Lawson, I'm going to call up Michael Shillstone, Doug Haynes, and Natalie Schumann. Please begin. Go ahead.
Thank you. Craig Lawson. I'm sorry, I was in the hallway when you called
my
name.
That's fine.
I sent a two-page letter, which I think you received on our letterhead. I'm speaking as a land use consultant who's been working for more than 30 years on items in Los Angeles, doing entitlement work and working with the code. Most of the approvals that we get are typically good for 3 years, and in some cases, though, you allow for a longer time period. In the case of hospitals, schools, and religious institutions, you allow those to be almost unlimited as long as they follow certain requirements. I'm asking that you consider adding museums to that list of institutional uses, which should have an unlimited amount of time to use their entitlements. Most museums are facing having to go through fundraising, construction plans, and other things. Many times it takes more than 3 years, sometimes up to 10 years. So I'm asking that you consider that as an addition in terms of what you're doing here today. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I don't have a copy of that letter.
I believe it was in our 48-hour correspondence. Is that correct, staff? Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon again. I'm Michael Shillstone with Central City Association. We're strongly supportive of the city's efforts to improve the clarity and predictability of the planning approvals process. We believe there are a few key areas of the proposed ordinance that can be amended to make the entitlement process more user-friendly and expedient. Among the most important, we believe that the language of Section 13.4.4H should be changed to allow for applicants to seek minor modifications to their proposals rather than having to restart the application process. Additionally, we think a simple but impactful change would be to include the general procedural elements with each individual entitlement process so that users of the code can find all the required steps in one location. We have detailed these and several other suggestions in the letter we have distributed to the clerk today, and we appreciate your thoughtful consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Haynes, welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Haynes. Just some real quick comments. First, I attended the June hearing on this matter, and I'm on two neighborhood councils, but I wasn't aware until this agenda came out that the final version was available. It takes a while for neighborhood councils to digest this sort of material, and so I would ask that you allow us that time to do so. Real quick, 300 feet for radius notification is much less than a block. Posting is a great idea, but it should be at least 15 days. Adjustments should not be moved from the experienced ZAs to planning staff. Also, adjustments are inconsistent with the city charter, so there may be a problematic issue with that. The director should not be interpreting unclear regulations. The purpose of this whole thing just makes things clear. So everything should be clear, and we shouldn't have that provision. Alternative compliance opens a can of worms. I'm really concerned about that. Tentative tracks right now have 30 days to go to council. If you're going to be consistent, let's make that 75 days. I have more things, but I only had a minute. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Felicia Smith, Yelena Zeltzer, and Kathleen Larson. And those are all the speaker cards I had. If you wish to speak but did not get a card in, please come up and see James and let him know.
Samantha. Can I ask, Doug, have you submitted that list? You don't need to respond to me, but if you have a list and you can submit it to James, we can take a look at it. That's him over there. Sorry to interrupt. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Alicia Sutton. That's S-U-T-T-O-N. That's okay. I object to item 10 on your agenda today for the reasons that have already been listed here. So in the matter of time, I will just focus on this. The outreach process is of concern to me. I know there was a long list of things that were mentioned. However, there were no mailers, no flyers, no signs, no posters in frequented public establishments in the community for people who do not have access to electronic media. We are in an active community, and we did not get this information until very recently. As far as the comparisons and the changes in there, if you look at Section 13 and draw the comparisons as to where those decisions end, they end with the Director of Planning, and we would like to keep that open also to having community outreach with the neighborhood communities.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sylvie Shane, will you please join the line? And welcome, come on up.
Kathleen Larson, Friends of the Montecito. I would request that we have more time to look at this. When you get notice of 900 pages at 8 o'clock last night on an email where people are concerned that the good citizens who take their time, like you commissioners take your time, to go through these things, and we have not had a chance to review it. The worst things come out that I will not repeat, that the good citizens are trying to be shunted aside, that their opinions are not important. They don't want to have the commissions and boards don't want to have be bothered with the citizens. I don't think this is what you intended, but there's 900 pages of stuff, and we have to know what is going on. So I really do ask for extension on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Liz Heron, will you also please join the line? Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Yelena Zeltzer. I'm here on behalf of Unite Here Local 11. We generally support the process and procedures ordinance. We think it's a great undertaking. We urge the following changes. One, on CEQA, currently appellants can appeal addendums to EIRs and consistency determination to City Council. However, these are not specifically included in the draft. All CEQA determinations should be appealable to council as is current practice. Additionally, CEQA appellants should be permitted to respond to new analysis by project components until final action by council is taken. Second, the current PPO establishes different standards of what the record is during appeals and CUP proceedings. The record should include all information submitted to the city before the final hearing is closed. And finally, the current PPO allows conditions of approval that exempt project requiring a CUP from height and area regulations and required by code. The PPO should be revised to make sure a CUP does not exempt a project from these regulations without the appropriate code required findings. Sorry.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Sylvie.
Thank you, commissioners. My name is Sylvie Shane. I'm a tenants' rights and housing rights advocate. I want to echo and implore you to please continue this item so that those of us who are in the tenants' advocate community have an opportunity to review this. This process has been ongoing for 2 years, but many of us have only recently been galvanized as we recognize the impact to our own housing because of development. And while this is a process to streamline, proposals such as curtailing the public process, like taking away the notification of occupants of the buildings that are proposed for redevelopment, is really problematic. So I ask, this was a 900-page document that many people didn't know about until last week. I only knew about it this week. Please, some extra time so that we can participate in this process. Public participation brings forward really unique solutions, like right of return, that is suddenly something being talked about in development. So we would like to participate in this, and we need more time. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Liz Heron. I came to speak on the ADU ordinance, and I haven't really been very aware of this one. But since I work in mostly hillside architecture, I'm an architect, I wanted to comment on a couple things of the procedures that I've been struggling with. In hillside architecture, when you're on a street that's less than 20 feet wide and you don't have a path to the hillside collector, you have to go to the ZA for a case. And then you also have to do a dual entitlement for DAR case-specific plan cases. Those cases have been running at least a year and a half to 2 years. Is there any provision in this ordinance? I hope so. And I hope that you would continue this ordinance, because I would like to weigh in somewhat, because the publicity has not been great. In that, is there a limit to the timeline that it takes for the zoning administrator to consider cases? So, I mean, I've had things expire, I've had procedures change in lieu while waiting for the case to be heard, a year and a half. That's too long. So I'm trying to provide housing to the city, and the zoning procedures have made it impossible. Thank you. Please continue this case.
Thank you. That's the last speaker card I have on this item. At this time, we are going to close public testimony. Would staff like to, I'm sure you would, like to address some of what you heard today?
Good afternoon. Phyllis Nathanson with the Planning Department. Bonnie is here to answer more technical questions, but I just wanted to weigh in on the effort that our department went to go ahead with the public outreach. We really want to emphasize what we did. First of all, we issued our evaluation report several years ago, which this commission weighed in on. And there was an entire chapter devoted to the subject of processes and procedures. We also worked very closely with our zoning advisory committee in comprising this ordinance. And the zoning advisory committee is open to the public, and it represents stakeholders from very many areas. We went to the neighborhood council alliances to make presentations, and we went to PlanCheck, which is one of those alliances, numerous times. And PlanCheck is the association of all the neighborhood councils that specifically deal with planning and zoning issues on a citywide basis. We also attended and presented to individual neighborhood councils. We posted regularly on social media. We staffed a regular stand at the Hollywood Farmers Market. We have our own webpage. The ordinance itself was posted on Markup, which is an interactive application that allowed visitors to make comments directly on the document for us to see. And we've used this actually for all the important documents associated with the RECODE project. And information on the ordinance and the announcement of public hearings has been covered numerous times in the department newsletter. We've held 5 public hearings, and we've presented updates on RECODE. We've submitted that to our list of over 3,000 individuals and organizations. We met with individuals and groups, including industry representatives and neighborhood groups. And processes, procedures, ordinance has been mentioned in all of the RECODE outreach efforts.
Thank you. Okay, Commissioner, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Bonnie Kim from the Department of City Planning. I just wanted to respond to some of the comments that we heard. So first, regarding the proposed change to the subdivision processes, as part of this ordinance, as we had mentioned, it's really more a reorganization of information. So we really tried to limit the scope of any changes to just changes for the sake of alignment or standardization, and no major policy changes. So this is really meant to establish a framework, lay the groundwork for a clean sort of table, so that in the future we can assess the processes and procedures and make any policy decisions with a better understanding of the existing situation. And then with regards to the comment about the authorities, the city council authority, and how that would be modifying the city charter, that is definitely not our intention, but we understand that the language may be confusing and could lead to that interpretation. In consultation with the city attorney, it was not determined that would be the case, but we are comfortable amending the language or moving any confusing language altogether regarding that point, if that would satisfy that. In regards to upzoning, as I had stated before, there is no zone changes being proposed as a part of this ordinance. This is purely administrative provision, so there would be no change to your zoning of your property, whether it's upzoning or downzoning. Next, the comments about the noticing periods being shrunk. That is not true across the board. As I had mentioned, we have We had a range for our over 100 existing processes from 10 to 24 days for mail notice, and we are proposing the standard at 21. So that does mean that those that were previously 24 would be losing 3 days down to 21, but it also means that those that were previously 10 or 14 or 15 would be going up to 21. So we felt that 21 wasn't appropriate compromise between the existing two ends of the spectrum of mail notice. And then as for waivers of hearing, or no longer being able to object to a waiver of a hearing, in fact, it's the reverse, where a required hearing can only be waived if the applicant has submitted in writing from all the adjacent and abutting property owners. So there is no waiving without written confirmation from the surrounding properties. As to allowing applicants to seek minor modifications, we wanted to standardize a modification process. That's why we are including a review or entitlement modification of entitlement process. That would be a standard. It would be the same for every process that it would apply to, instead of having ad hoc modification processes. So we feel we should stick to that standard. And then the comment about including the general procedural elements into each process. As we were considering the organization of the new chapter, we felt that it was appropriate to include one general procedural elements section at the beginning, so that any provisions that would apply to all processes would be located in one place, instead of being repeated in each section, so that that would minimize any potential for inconsistency between the various sections, and then also minimizing any potential for future changes for the sake of ad hoc exceptions. But we understand that for people who are not familiar with the structure, that could be confusing. So we are open to considering inserting a reference to the general procedural elements into each process. So while we wouldn't recommend inserting the general procedure, the actual provisions, and repeating those provisions in each section, we would be open to including a reference to the general procedural elements so that people are at least aware that there is a section that they should be referencing. The museums being added to the institutional list with extended utilization periods. As I had mentioned, we are extending the utilization period for 100% affordable project, affordable housing projects from 3 years to 6 years. One of the comments we received were to add museums to that list so they would also get 6 years. We felt that that was outside of the scope of the current ordinance because we really wanted to limit it to just procedural changes, and that was more of a policy change. But we are open to adding it in if the commission so desires. Regarding the comment about a 300-foot notification being too short, as I had mentioned, we have three tiers today. We have adjacent and abutting, 100 feet and 500 feet, and we are proposing adjacent and abutting 300 feet and 500 feet. We felt like it was appropriate to maintain three tiers of notification requirements because there are different categories of entitlements, and not every entitlement should necessarily require an expansive notification radius. The comment about the alternative compliance being too open-ended, we feel confident that the proposed process is very clear about any limitations, and that the code would have to first allow a standard to even use the process before it would be before any project would be eligible for it. So we feel comfortable sticking with our original recommendation as proposed. And then comment about tentative tract max, having longer times to act. Again, we wanted to really limit the scope of our policy changes to, our scope of changes to a procedural and alignment and standardization, and not make any major policy changes. So we are not proposing any changes to any substantive changes to the subdivision processes. Um, Right. So regarding the comment about CEQA, the CEQA appeals process and appellants not being able to appeal the addenda, there was no intention to change the department policy and how we process those, but we'll consult with the city attorneys to make sure that any changes that are being made are the ones that we fully intend. And then the comment about the CUP allowing an exemption from certain regulations or standards, that is what constitutes a CUP today. That's a provision that's included in the zoning code today in the CUP section, and we are merely maintaining that provision because, once again, we are trying not to make any major policy changes. We do think in the future, when we are in a position to reassess these processes and procedures, that is something that we could look at, because that would be a major policy decision. And then the Hillside ZAD time to act. As of right now, we are proposing that a ZAD or a Class 1 CUP has a 75-day time to act. So that would be the standard. But of course, as is common for entitlements, that time to act may be extended by mutual consent between the applicant and the decision maker.
Thank you. I think you've given us a lot to digest. So commissioners, I'm gonna go around the horseshoe, allow you to ask questions, and then after you're done asking your questions, if you have specific changes you'd like to make, I'd like you to be, again, very specific with what you'd like to change. If you have suggestions about continuances, we can discuss that too. Just to reiterate what staff said, I see this ordinance as not being a place to dive into policy changes. It's just a reorganization of the code, making it a little bit more digestible and user-friendly with great flowcharts and nomenclature that is not plannerese. So I'm gonna start on my left with David.
David Ambrose here. I'll defer to the chair to thank everybody for their work so we don't spend all day doing that. Goes without saying. I would move it and call the question. I think there's additional time between us and council for folks to digest more. I think to the point and the credit of our friends, the planning department, there's been exhaustive public outreach. It certainly can never be enough in the eyes of some. I think we've done more than enough. I've been party to this now for 4 years, and I think it's time. That's it.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Great presentation, Bonnie. Very, very thorough. And I think it's the first time you're in front of us, so you succinctly put everything together of 2 years of work that staff has done, and I feel very comfortable with the recommended action. Thank you.
Thank you. Vahid?
I concur.
Wow. Renee?
Okay, this is Renee Dake Wilson. Trying to take a detailed look at this and make sure that people who have submitted a lot of comments feel heard, and that I understand what we're talking about today and the limitations of it. So I'm very supportive. I think it's great that you've taken, and I think this is part of the misunderstanding, but you have taken process and procedures from all these different places in the code and put them in one place, and taken the timelines and the referral items all and put them in one place so that each process is all separate. But if you want to look at a timeline, you look at the timeline place. It all seems very clear. And I think much of the confusion and upset by some of the groups that I have heard today and received by email seems to be lack of understanding of that, and it's because it's a 900-page document of very wonky processes and procedures. So I think I have, from my professional experience submitting projects and trying to get timelines for various procedures, as well as from sitting at this commission and watching expiration dates, I think syncing up of deadlines and dates is, in general, very good. I am concern, and I also think it's good that you have looked at what's the right thing to do versus this is the way we've always been doing it. So I think that's a very important lens to look at. So here are some specific questions. One of the, Heidi, who is here, I also received her letter to her neighborhood through a couple of people I know. And I think her concern boils down to wanting to make sure that decision-making isn't taken from the people, AKA who they've elected, and given to staff, or who's got their job, or maybe a misunderstanding. Commissioners, we are appointed by elected officials, but and the ZA is a staff person. Like, there are all these different roles. So can you talk a little bit about some, you talked a little bit about the director of planning, who is a staff member appointed by the mayor. That authority has typically for ZAs or ZADs been given to, no, for ZADs has been given to the ZA, of course. It's been delegated there because it's a zoning authority determination by very, boy, we're wonky. Like, it took like 10 sentences and we're super wonky, and that's 900 pages of this, so it's completely understandable that it's unclear to people. Anyway, when you're taking a delegation of authority away from the director of planning and giving it to the ZA, that is actually how it's done, right? Yes. Okay, so I was wondering if there are other instances, though, that you can, and that's when you iterated, where you can say, is there any authority taken from an elected official and given it to an appointed or staff member? Or vice versa? Are there any instances, for example, the Planning Commission delegates our authority on decisions, we'll make a decision at Planning Commission here today, and there are minor modifications that are made along the way, and we have delegated that authority to the Director of Planning, hence the staff underneath them, to make those minor modifications so that cases don't have to ping-pong back and forth to us many, many times. Is it that type of thing, or is it that the decision maker is wholesale different?
Bonnie Kim from the Department of City Planning. So I'm not sure that I completely understood your question, but when we say that a decision maker has changed, that means that, yes, instead of being the director or a delegated authority from the director to the zoning administrator, it is officially the zoning administrator that is making that decision, or vice versa. Whereas previously a zoning administrator made the determination, for example, on an adjustment, we are proposing that it be wholesale given to the director. So there are at least two instances with the adjustment and then the nuisance abatement revocation. With the adjustment, it's currently a zoning administrator decision-making power, and we are proposing that it becomes the director. And then with the nuisance abatement revocation, it's currently a director decision that we are proposing be changed to the ZA. But otherwise, there's no intention that the decision. And then the single APC CUP is being reassigned to the CPC. So those are three instances where we are proposing a change in decision maker, but there is no change proposed for a city council authority or a mayor authority to delegate or to take away the authority from those elected bodies and then put them at the director or ZA level.
I'd like to, it's Phyllis Nathanson. I'd like to add that there's no change. Delegation from, there's no change from a commission authority to a staff authority or vice versa.
Okay, that's very clear, and I appreciate that clarification, because I think that was one main concern I heard. Regarding Craig Lawson's letter and his comments today, I believe that what he's talking about is that in LAMC 1225A3A, I'm reading his letter, so it allows hospitals, schools, and religious institutions to have unlimited time to utilize their land use entitlements if they meet the requirements of the zone section. And under the proposed processes and procedures, that would remain, correct?
Correct.
But when that question was asked, or when you spoke about in your comments, you put it in, bundled it with affordable housing, which is different.
So the original comment, or the letter that we had reviewed from Craig Lawson, originally asked that it be included with the 6-year time extension for affordable housing, because the reasoning for the extension for affordable housing was the same as the reasoning for an extension for the museums. So today is the first time that we've heard that they're asking for it to be added to the list of the to the schools and hospitals that are sort of unlimited.
Okay, so previously they were asking for 6 years, and now they're asking for unlimited time, like hospitals, schools, and religious institutions. That museums would get that unlimited time. I'm gonna have to think about that. Okay. It appears to me from Appendix B, page 304, that the CPC is taken out of approval of river guidelines, and that the CPC should be the decision maker for streetscape, river, and other design guidelines.
Right, so that is related to the new policy action. That's the generic policy action process that we, that's based on the three existing processes by which the CPC can adopt guidelines, one of which is the Rio, or the river guidelines.
Yep.
So because those were specific to those types of policy documents, they didn't allow for that process to be used for any future policy documents. So we felt it was appropriate to create a generic standardized process, so that instead of being limited to just the river or a CASP or those specifically listed documents, that the CPC would be able to take action on any future types, including a streetscape plan.
Okay, so that's just reorganized.
Yes.
Instead of being iterated specifically in the Rio, it's over here in some other section that you know exactly what that number is.
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm concerned that the notification of certain CUPs is reduced from 500 to 300 feet. I feel like one of the main things we hear from people is not enough notice, not enough awareness. And what I heard you say earlier might have been that 500 feet became 500 feet and 100 feet became 300 feet noticing. Is that correct?
It's not a one-to-one. So there are, it's similar to the change in the time for mail notice, where it was a spectrum, and so some went up and some went down, and that's the same for the radius. There are some processes, for example, coastal, that were previously 100, and those are going up to 300. And then there are some, like the project permit compliance in the specific plan, that were previously 100, and now they're adjacent and abutting. So we've explained all those instances, the specifics of what's going up and what's going down in the staff report, as well as including in pages 6 and 7 of Appendix D, a matrix of all the changes. So you can review those at a glance. But it's not just everything that was 100 is now 300. It's,
okay.
It's a case by case.
Okay, I can't say that I've reviewed that closely enough to be able to agree or disagree with you. I trust you as thoughtful, committed individuals, but obviously I hear concern about this every Planning Commission hearing, so that remains an area of concern for me, and I think that door should be opened about what those distances should be. I want to also, another question I have is to confirm that all projects and approvals and actions are stayed pending CEQA appeal. Okay. Okay, you've talked about that. CCA submitted a letter to a summary of recommendations today. Do you have a response to this letter? Do you have this letter?
Or I guess we don't have the letter in front of us currently.
Okay, so I'm going to read it.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
It was the
based on the public comment, it was in relation to the general procedural elements being added to each code section. Is that accurate?
Yes.
We now have the letter.
Oh, okay. All right, well, we believe that we explained our reasoning, but we are
all
open.
All of these?
On that point about the general procedural elements,
okay,
and then regarding,
yes,
the minor modification.
I agree with your recommendation on item one. I heard that other architect in the audience give public comment today regarding the ZAD, I believe she has, for a hillside area with 20-foot wide street, waiting for a process where there's no time limit for the ZAD to be heard. And so it goes on for a long time, and sometimes you have to extend your permit application and the code changes. That's actually happened to me on a project, and that sucks because you've done a lot of work. You've been an architect, paid this fee that your client is complaining about, and then your process goes on so much that your work is invalidated because the code has changed while you're waiting. So it seems like there should be a freezing of the code based on your submittal, unless your submittal is not allowed, or some time to act within. Can you understand the problem that I'm trying to get at? Maybe you have a better suggestion. I don't mean to say that people submit erroneously incomplete applications, but it has happened on projects I have worked on, and that speaker today, who's the other architect whose name I don't know, also talked about that time extension.
We are aware of you can submit a vesting application, which would do what you, I believe you're talking about, which would sort of freeze the code at the time that you applied for those applications. Those are specific to only certain types of entitlements, like a conditional use permit or a tentative tract map. You can't do a vested application for all types of entitlements.
Now, for little projects in the hillside is what I'm talking about and what she's talking about, and that's where it stung me. And often where it stings community members with low-income projects, smaller projects with not a lot of budget. We're talking sophisticated, yeah, we've got Craig Lawson, we've got all these planning commission projects, great. You know, they have a budget to have someone return a few times. But when you're talking about a single-family residence or a hillside project, it's often a lower budget project, and that process is really difficult. And that's why I care about stuff like this.
Right, so perhaps, this is Bonnie Kim from the Department of City Planning. Perhaps some of the difficulty comes from the confusion, and that's what we're hoping to address with the standardized format and standard headings. So we clearly say, you know, for the decision maker, how many days they have to act. The unpredictability of not knowing is what I think frustrates a lot of people, and so with the new format and flowcharts and standard language, we are hoping that it's clear what the rules are, and then letting them know, or letting any person who reads that code section know that, yes, this is the standard time to act, 75 days for this particular ZAD action, and then if there's a mutual consent between the applicant and the decision maker, that may be extended.
It sounds like the person who came to speak here earlier is not still in the audience. I don't see her, but she had waited for something for a year and a half and it had expired. So there was no mutual consent about the extension. The code changed and then there they are holding the bag. So you're saying the procedure that you're talking about is new?
No, it's the existing rules, but it could be that because they were unclear that
that the ZAD wasn't following them.
This is Kevin. Let me jump in, and I appreciate our staff's response. I think, first of all, we're happy to follow up with that individual. There could be more to that story. Potentially there was an environmental or a haul route issue, but certainly want to do better than a year if that's how long it really took. So we'll make sure we look into that. But I think the other reference is when we do adopt a code change to the hillsides, which is not, again, part of this action, I want to really emphasize that the intent of this action was really to, as much as possible, leave the pieces as they are and kind of reassemble them into packets. And there's a couple exceptions
totally.
That had to be moved. But I really want for the audience as well to know that we really tried to stay within our lane and just simply move things around. But there is a 18-month building permit kind of grandfathering in. So if the hillside ordinance changed, which it did change in 2017, projects that are in the pipeline for 18 months can still kind of chug along. Oftentimes, I think maybe you're referencing that if you're in month 18 of that, it can get kind of dicey. At the same time, we don't want to have an unlimited period of time when, let's say, the community wants some new rules they expect them to start applying the new buildings, and you might have a project that's under construction 2 years later, and it's still applying the old rules. It could be frustrating. So I think that's the issue. Maybe we can respond. I don't believe we changed that 18-month timeline. Commissioner, if that's something you're interested in, we could kind of focus on that. But that really is for building codes. Just want to clarify that.
Okay, so if it's building and safety permit, I don't think we're dealing with the expiration of the building and safety permit. I think what your recommendation is correct. I don't understand this other person's problem enough to be to argue it, but I'm trying to shine some light on some very technical things that people are getting involved in, so I don't have a good ask for that. The CCA article says clarify section 13.10.2e to allow for lot line adjustments in three dimensions. What's that mean?
Yeah, it sounds like they're talking about probably airspace lots or condominiums.
Is that a processes and procedures item?
No, so that's in line with our, we are trying to minimize the scope of changes. We're really just reorganizing information. So that would be
a departure.
I agree.
Okay, so let's not, Okay, I'm fine with the technical modifications. Okay. I guess there are a lot of very small, nitpicky items that a lot of people have questions about, and I want to hear about, if we move forward today, how those are going to be addressed.
Tom Rothman, Planning Department, and yes, we've heard many things through the course of the drafting of this ordinance, and we are trying to stay on top of keeping the consolidation organized, and that's why we have limited the policy changes. But we have heard recently some things that can be changed, and we'd like to keep any changes that we'll consider before it goes to Plum, after Plum, to very, very technical corrections so that this commission could approve it at the end of the day, as opposed to disapproving it if we start incorporating policy changes. So our answers will be to most people, if it's a policy change, we would like to reconsider it once this is organized in a fashion that everybody can grasp. But if there are some inaccuracies or some things in it that we never intended to do, we could change that. Our website is up, our contact information is all over the place, so I've already spoken to several people who have submitted letters and comments over the last week, and if they are technical corrections that are either some inaccuracies or something that had never been intended, we will change it along the way. But okay, we would like to keep our policy of no policy changes as strict as possible. So all of these things we're hearing are great, and we're hearing some things that need to be fixed, should be fixed, we agree with, but we are keeping them separate so that we can come back to this again as a targeted code amendment, because there are so many issues we can't study them all and the ramifications they might have in other places. So we'd like to keep it just technical for now, but we are open as it goes to Plum, after the city attorney, all the way up to city council.
Okay.
Kevin, this is Kevin again, sorry to interrupt. Just to build off of Tom's comments, the recommendation the Planning Commission makes is the one that we will take forward to Plum and council. We don't make our own recommendations after that. I think as our staff is suggesting, things like the Subdivision Map Act, other types of ordinance procedures may bubble up. They may need to be handled on a sidetrack that has its own public outreach process. In terms of what the intent of the ordinance is today, I think we referenced a couple of things we want to clarify. We will be going through the form and legality process with our city attorney. They take a look at the ordinance as it goes to Plum, give us some feedback, make sure that we've dotted all of our I's and crossed our T's. So through that process as well, I think if there's an opportunity to just clarify the intent, which I think we've said today, we'll make sure we do that. Just wanted to add that to that. So.
Okay. I'm going to ask, I just asked 4,000 questions, but, and I don't, I'm not going to make a recommendation for changing, but I just am going to make a, other than staff's recommended actions, I'm just going to say I am hearing a lot of questions, and I'm glad you're open to addressing each and every one. Thanks.
Thank you, Renee, for taking us through all of those letters. I think that did a great service to the public. Veronica?
I just have one clarifying question. You said that the idea of posting in a newspaper versus the letters is not going to happen. The letters will continue?
Bonnie Kim from the City Planning. Correct. We're just maintaining the existing notification requirements for those legislative actions, which includes mail notice instead of substituting that.
I think that's a good idea too. Okay. I know you did a, you have been doing a lot of outreach, so I'm not trying to tell you how to do it, but I was just thinking, is there a poster like at the counter saying like, hey, we're doing these changes, check it out at this website or whatever? I just think that maybe that's where a lot of people who may be of most interest to these changes might be, versus sometimes, you know, neighborhood councils may be interested, but I think at the counter you might get more folks that would be more interested in checking it out. Just an idea. Other than that, thank you and good job. Thank you. Mark Mitchell.
Okay. Again, you know, thanks for your thorough work and presentation. To me, this is about consolidating processes, right? Making this thing easier. So I think we've kind of gone off track from my point of view, at least a little bit here in these discussions, but it's been necessary to have them. So I am comforted tremendously by staff's recent comment about willingness to let this process breathe a little bit. So I'm trying to separate the two. Ease of use, consolidation of processes, and then substantive changes. So with that in mind, I am comfortable moving forward as is.
Thank you. I want to thank all the members of the public who sent letters, came out today, gave feedback. It does sound like staff is, for policy changes, really keeping a running list of policy changes we can make once this processes and procedures ordinance moves. Thank you, commissioners, for your input. I appreciate it. And staff, this was fantastic. And with that, I'm ready to make a motion supporting staff's recommended actions on this item.
Caroline Cho, second.
With the technical modifications.
I second that.
James, we have a first and a second. Will you please call for the vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Millman?
Yes.
Commissioner Cho?
Yes.
Commissioner Ambrose?
Yes.
Commissioner Corsan?
Yes.
Commissioner Mitchell?
Yes.
Commissioner Padilla Campos?
Yes.
Commissioner Dake Wilson?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Thank you.